Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the best darn show on the internet, the Oversharing Show. In this episode, we have the conclusion of our amazing interview with Christopher Gardner. If you'd like to find out more about Christopher Gardner, you can go to his website at topherhq.com. That's TOPHERHQ.com. And if you'd like to find out more about the Oversharing Show or support us, you can go to morelawsmoreproblems.com, click on the Oversharing tab, and you'll find everything that you need. Enjoy the rest of the episode. See you guys next week.
You've never experienced anything. Nothing has ever happened behind you. Ever. Even if you feel something behind you, that's still in front of your consciousness. You are the fourth wall.
I wanted to ask you about that, so I'm glad you brought it up.
So like right now, you're looking at a screen and it appears that I'm on the screen. And then you're aware of the peripherals, that what's around your screen and stuff like that. And you breathe and maybe you have a cat or two and you feel some air here and there. And like you have thoughts and the thoughts are taking you to other times and places. And, you know, you have some sensations about this, that, and the other. You're like, oh, this guy's long-winded. He talks too much, whatever. All this stuff.
Oversharing.
No, you're just oversharing. That's why we...
I finally got the name now. That's awesome. Not the brightest bulb. So all these things are occurring, right? All of it. All of it. From your perspective, where is it happening?
Right in front of you.
Even when you become aware of something back there.
Yeah.
It's always in front of you. Now, if you can hold on to the location, if you can hold on to that, that's what's known as self-inquiry. And this is the basis of all philosophy. Know thyself. When you are identified with the external, when you have given externalized authority, when you have made an idol out of your body, and oh, my body is so important, oh, or that body is so important, or oh, you know, Biden, whatever. Mm-hmm. That's the joke.
Cosmic joke.
That's the joke. And that's what this parasite class in this realm of inertia wants us to do. It isolates and it goes, okay, if I can isolate somebody, if I can get their consciousness to actually think it's this body that's alone and is constantly fighting with its environment, I get to siphon its energy as long as I want to. Yay! That's the whole game. That's the whole thing. There, and once you understand that, you even like, huh, okay. Yeah, I see parasites in the physical reality. That would make sense that there's parasites at that level too. As above, so below. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. There's a corollary. Makes sense.
Yeah. It reminds me of like a battery. You know, some people, we were talking to Benjamin Balderson. He's talking about how the sun and the moon kind of mimic this diode. So it appears that we're in some kind of battery. And if you take the as above, so below, we're just little batteries and we could be using the energy for ourselves to create, or we could be letting somebody else use our energy to create what they want, which is, you know, the new world order or whatever they want to do. So,
yeah. And that's why I think Jesus's words were spun on its head to make what we know now of the church. Jesus was literally, and I love Jesus. Like, I love that dude. I don't care if he's not real.
Yeah.
Whoever wrote him page into existence, hallelujah.
I know.
If he was real, hallelujah also. Either way.
Exactly.
Yep.
Either way, that MNF-er crushed so hard.
I love that.
First of all, I was like, fear not, fear not, fear not, fear not, fear not.
Right.
And then his I've read everything from this dude. He literally said over and over and over again, if God loves the birds and the worms enough to provide for them at a level that they don't worry, do you not think that same creator loves you less?
Exactly.
Like, that's all he was. He was like, stop fucking worrying. The kingdom of God is within you. It's within you. It's in you. It's literally within you.
The Holy Spirit is within you.
If you're worried, you have disinherited yourself. You have lost your inheritance. Now you're that lonely little Karen that wants to die because you're the victim. And woe is me. Oh, woe. In a very odd way, that means you have over-identified with, you've made your body an idol and have forgotten your inheritance. You're in this world, but you are not of it. You are animating the hologram. You are not the fucking hologram.
Wow.
Peace. I'm out. 33 years. Gone. Tired.
Yeah, right. 33 years is all I could take of it.
Get her done.
Could you imagine? I mean, could you imagine, like, having that level of just faith? Like, I could only aspire to have that level of just absolute knowingness.
Mm-hmm.
And being at that level and just being around all these doubters and haters. Like, that's hell. Like, when you know. And the thing was, he's a much better man than I could ever be because he actually had compassion.
Yeah.
Like, he was like, literally like.
Love and compassion. Love God. Love people.
The
greatest commandment.
I could only pray to have that compassion. You know, that's probably why I'm here, because I don't have that.
You must have done a lot of grounding. It's probably why he was washing so many feet and walking around barefoot everywhere.
I have to say, though, there is something very humbling about when you get to work on other bodies. And I've talked to other surgeons about this. There's such a reality when you work with a body, because a body cannot lie. The mind lies all the time, but the body never lies.
Yeah. I have a book called The Body Never Lies.
Yeah. So when you wash a person's feet, when I massage somebody and they're naked and I'm just with them, there's such an honesty. I think I've received probably like a PhD in psychology, just being able to be with people in such a vulnerable space. Because there's a connection that occurs when trust happens, and that connection is invaluable. You know, when they poll people about the people that they go and get their guidance from, it always starts with trust. If trust isn't there, then it doesn't, there's no loop current. And like, when you massage people and you work with people for years and years and years and years, there's this trust that's there, and there's this vulnerability, and it's an absolutely beautiful thing. It's been one of the best teachers of my life.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to ask you about, you talked about you were an Aquarius Pisces cusp, but are you speaking of the sidereal or the tropical? And I guess I also wanted to know more in depth on how you view those two. Like, I know you talked about it a little bit right now, but it maybe explain a little bit on like the Western and versus the sidereal. And I remember you talking about it on one of your podcasts about one is like, I feel like you said one is like the external or the exoteric, and the other is the internal and the esoteric. I think you just recently said it was something with the ego versus was it superego or something like that?
So what I was saying earlier with the 12 signs. So the big debate amongst astrologers is they're like, is there 12 signs or are there 13 signs? And then you'll have a school of thought with the majority of astrologers that say the signs are not actually connected to the constellations.
Okay. Yes. I remember that. Mm-hmm.
That is absolute lunacy. That'd be like me saying, hey, the sunrise, we're going to have that at like 3 a.m. Because guess what? When the sun rises in the east, that's not connected to what we're going to call the sunrise. Get the fuck out of here. The signs are connected to the constellations. Just because you studied the wrong thing for 15 years. In fact, the majority of astrologers I talk to, they've fucking done dog shit with their research. And they hold on to the 12 sign thing like it's like the end of the world. What is nature telling you? I had to be humbled by this. I was attached to my Pisces for 20 years, but I had to be humbled. And I did humble myself to the fact that, wait a minute, that's not true. That's not what was in the sky at 5:30 in the evening in Fort Lauderdale as the sun was setting. It was actually right in between Aquarius and Pisces. Let go of your bullshit. The constellations are what the signs are based off of. I studied a system called Celestics that was developed by John Lamb Lash. He had just taken it from older schools of thought, which were the ancient Ayurvedic ways of looking at the sky. And I actually visited a temple in southern India, which it had the 13 dakinis, the 13 different dakinis that were associated with each one of the constellations. Still in alignment, by the way. And so,
wow.
The constellations are different sizes. They're literally like Scorpio is like this big, Aquarius is like this big. So why are we dividing the sky up into these 30 degrees? And so you have the Western mind, which is so apropos for the card you pulled, the knight with the swords is like, okay, I'm cutting through this. I'm going to make it simple. I'm going to divide the sky up by 30 degrees and we're not going to attach those pesky constellations to the signs. We're not going to do it because fuck, they're not even the same size up there. It's too complicated. And we're going to generalize everything and tell everybody that they're fucking beautiful with their horoscope. And so the victim is just going to go, oh my God, I knew that about myself. No. The signs, the way it was originally intended, and it never changes. It does not go away. The signs are archetypes attached to the constellations. They're just archetypes. Mm-hmm. And every archetype has a Janus. It has two faces. It has the light side of it and it has the dark side of it. And so once you get into that, you go, oh, 2 times 13 is 26. And then you get into the math of what 26 represents. And then you get into the angelic language of English, the Angelish. It's very divine. The whole system is absolutely divine. And it's not for the general person. It's not for the person that just wants their 30 degrees and I eat my dinner every time at the same night and I eat the same thing on every Tuesday. And, you know, I want to make sure my church sermon is always that. No, it's not for that person. It's for the person that is willing to go outside and look at the sky and like be interactive with it. It's for the person that actually wants to interact with the environment and not interact in a way of like, oh, I'm going to build this and I'm going to dominate this and this is my place and this is it. It's like interact, meaning you fucking listen. And so I was on the fence until the day that my daughter was born. My wife was a fucking trooper. We had a home birth, and she was 7 hours into the labor. So she was really in it. She kicked me out of the bathroom. She's like, get out. And so I was like, okay. I walked outside. It was a little bit after 4 a.m. in the morning. And it was like nerve wracking, you know, so I'm a new dad. Like my wife is like dying, you know, she's giving birth, but it sounds like, you know, and I knew all of her requisite fears associated with it and all this stuff. And I walk outside and I, for 3 years, I took classes on celestics. So I trained myself to know the constellations and know what I'm looking at in the sky. So I look up in the moon, it's a harvest moon, which we're in right now as the recording of this last quarter phase of the moon. And I'm looking up at it, and on one side of it is this big bluish green dot, which was Neptune. And on the other side of it was Mars. And Mars is the prince or princess energy. And it was all right there within the constellation of Pisces. And I was like, and my wife is a triple Pisces. And so in olden lore, Neptune actually ruled Pisces. So I was like, I instantly felt total relief in my system. I'm like, my little princess is coming through the harvest moon. She was 2 weeks late. We've been waiting, you know, she waited. And by the way, this little stellium that occurred only occurred that night.
Wow.
And so I'm looking up and I was with this stellium for 20 minutes. And the doctor came out and Dr. Arcia, and we were talking, and he was so cool. Like the doctor came to our place and like made sure everything was cool. And I was telling him about the stars as well as I could in Spanish, which is horrible. And we're just up and we're just two dudes on the side of a hill, just looking up at the stars in awe. And I felt total relaxation. My wife ends up, you know, 4 hours later, giving birth to our daughter. Everything's perfect. 9 pounds, 5 ounces, huge baby comes out. Everything was natural. Everything was good. But I saw that constellation or the stellium, and I was just like, oh, I knew that was like a sign. You could say it was God. That was nature. That was God through nature saying, hey, you're... this is perfect timing.
Don't worry. Peace.
Don't worry. Dude, I look up on astro.com.
For her regular Western chart?
Right.
Tropical?
That stellium was in Aquarius. And I'm like, fuck off. I'm never looking at this shit again.
Whoa.
Wow.
So imagine how many people... they're going by just what a computer tells them. Mm-hmm. And you're going to see it with all this chat GPT stuff and all this aggregated information mm-hmm. that leads you in a certain direction. Mm-hmm. If you don't have your connection, your direct connection with the natural environment, you're not going to be steered in a direction that's good for you. You're going to be given only the information that it wants you to see. So I'm always trying to engender with my friends, with all the people I know, I'm like, you need to cultivate the skill of being aware of your environment and the skill of interacting with your environment and having the ability to listen and watch. Because it's there for us. It's there to show us.
Yeah.
It's there to give us the signs and wonders. But if you're filtering it through this like compiled, you know, funneled bullshit information, you're going to misinterpret it, and then you're going to make bad decisions.
So what about, like, I've heard people say that I understand that they're disconnected from the actual zodiacal constellations, but some people say that it's this way because it's by the seasons, and you know, it's like solar and it's seasonal.
But even so this is another reason why I got into it. I did 10 years of my best friend in Costa Rica as a shaman. And because I would massage tons of people after the shamanic retreats, and there was a knowingness that I really knew how to ground out. Like I could hold a grounded energy during ceremony. I ended up being part of over 60 ceremonies. And it was very hard for me to stay out of sympathy when I was in a ceremony. It was very hard because I'm even in regular life without anything, I can be way, way too sympathetic. So I ended up not doing many of these sessions after a few years, but I would work on the people afterwards. And I started to notice, because a lot of these things go all night, and I would just be watching the stars and stuff like that. And in Costa Rica, we always had to be super aware of our environment, because when the monsoons come, it's serious. Like it's a lot of water. And man, I started to be very aware of the light cycle, because when you're that close to the equator, the difference between, like, when you go through the analemma, there's only like an hour difference of light throughout the entire year, but the quality of light is really different. So because I had all these nights where I was up all night and like in a completely like higher, I guess you would say, higher level of sensitivity, because whenever you take ayahuasca, your light sensitivity triples. And I'm already extremely light sensitive. So I'd be like, they would have these ceremonies on the equinox, and I'd be like, it's not the equinox. I'm like, the other day was equinox. So I get it. People are right. They're like, well, if we need to split everything up, and there's the four cardinal signs, and there's, you know, the equinoxes always fall on these two signs, and the maybe. Maybe. What does equinox mean? It means equal day and equal night. So you don't need to look on a calendar for that. You could go to suncalc.org and type in your location and look up, when is the equal night and equal day of yours? And do you think every year on 3/21, it's that? Nope. And this is where it gets a lot of fun. And this is where it gets into, like, what is this thing that we live in? Is what the sun is, I would say the sun is the primary luminary that runs our life. I think the sun is felt. We feel it as heat, because heat is like extra information that you can't necessarily process. So the sun warms everything it touches because it's informing it, and it's informing it at such a level that there's an agitation. Have you ever been around somebody that's giving you too much information? And you actually feel it as like
too much.
The sun could be a portal of information. Mm-hmm. And our eyes just transduce it as light and heat.
Wow.
Because I'm telling you, wherever you are in the world, whatever environment you're in the world, the sun is always on a 13 mile arc over you at all times. So then that begs the question is, where is the stellar sphere? Where is that in relation to the solar arc? Guess what? It's over the axis mundi, which is your spine.
Crazy. That's not what I was told in science.
But the reason why you're lied to is because the black magicians, the parasites, they want to create, they want to distance you from your power. They don't want that creative spark coming through you because they can't control the creative. And so if imagine if there even was 6, 7, 8 billion people, if there even was that, imagine if those people, even in the middle of the bell curve that we were talking about, imagine if all of them had the simultaneous realization that they were the axis mundi.
It's too much.
Creation would blink out as we know.
Yeah, like that time you were on with Owen Benjamin and the internet broke.
Yes.
Similar to that, yeah. Yeah,
because people can go ahead. People can only hear what they can hear. Like there's only we all have certain energetic capacities, and we're not equal. You know, that which is behind the fourth wall is equal, but within the materium, within the actual creation of boundary, within that there are limits, there are capacities. And so it expresses differently, you know? And I think someone like Jesus by age 33 was like beyond.
He just blinked right out. He couldn't take it anymore.
Yeah. And maybe that manifested as they say, I have a feeling that that's incorrect, you know, considering that the Romans just put people on tree spikes back then. But yeah. The way victim narratives, the most I can tell is in this existence, one of the things that locks people to the materium the most is victim narratives. Mm-hmm. So the victim narrative, no matter how it's spun, whether you're a victim as a white guy, as a black woman, as a Jew, as a lesbian, whatever, everybody could be a fucking victim. I mean, give me a break. Everybody's gone through abuse cycles. Yes. And so the one thing I really like about Owen Benjamin as of late is that he's really pointed out most evil stems from a victim narrative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, we talk about that on the show a lot too, about how not to be a victim.
Yeah. Or if you feel yourself being a victim, it's not that it's bad. You can actually use it as a point to kind of say, oh, wait a minute, what's going on now? Why do I feel like a victim? You know, am I actually being attacked in the physical realm? Is somebody, you know, hurting me? Or am I just imagining that I'm being hurt? And then you can use that as a point for your attention to bring it back and to say, how am I not a victim in this whole thing?
Well, right. And to do self-work too, because if you can use people as a mirror. You know, if you're not using them as a mirror to help yourself, you're not doing yourself any service. You're just, you know, you just spiral out of control, letting people make you feel like you're a victim.
Right. Right. And also then giving the attention to the other side of Janus and like give it the attention to the victor. You know, it's not so much like, ooh, eliminate the victim. It's actually animate the victor. What does you being the victor in your life look like? You know, that was something I really had to like, you know, it's one of these things where coming from a family of artists, I've noticed anytime I draw anything and have sufficient love in the drawing, it ends up becoming a reality. I met my wife a year after I wrote a poem about her that described her perfectly.
Manifestation.
It's not manifestation. It's exactly the way light works. It's not manifestation. Manifestation has too much ego in it.
Okay.
There's nothing new under the sun.
Yeah.
So I think every once in a while, when the ego drops, it's sort of like when you're in the zone, how your highest potential shows up. I think on the imaginal realm, that can occur too, where for whatever reason, the ego isn't there. You drop into the zone and some inspiration comes through. And then there's just that has already happened. It's already there.
Yeah.
So it's not like you're making it. Manifestation just seems to be loaded, especially around.
Okay. I see what you mean.
Yeah, 100%. We've talked about this too with a friend of ours who actually did manifest things in his life, but he said it didn't work for him because he was coming from this egoic standpoint, and it just all went away as soon as it wasn't real anymore. I guess you could say it just kind of all went away. So
absolutely,
yeah.
It's one of these funny things where, at least the way it works for the way I'm wired in my programming, is if there's a strategy behind it, it's kind of gay. It's not gonna happen. But if it's more from an inspired space where, like, I didn't see it coming. I wrote this treatise on surprises. I'm like an old English guy. I was like, on surprises. but like, it was like all the best things in my life have been surprises.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I've gotten everything I've ever wanted and a lot of that shit. But the best things in my life have been the things I never knew I didn't want it. And it occurred and it was perfect. And I was like, amazing. Whoa. And it's such a humbling thing to receive something that's so awesome that I never expected. Mm-hmm. And then be like, oh my God. Because you talk to a lot of people that identify as manifestors and they're so lame. They're like, I thought of this. And so I manifested it. And I'm like, do you know 95% of the inputs that you receive on the physical level goes to your subconscious mind? And that the majority of your subconscious mind is just, computing all the stuff that your conscious mind isn't aware of. So is it possible maybe that all this stuff was indicated to you way beforehand? And then what you're calling manifestation is just pattern recognition?
Yeah.
No, I'm a manifester. It's the same thing with this, sun horoscopes. It's like, no, I want it the way I see it. So it's fun stuff.
Yeah.
I think my little one and my wife are just getting home now, so it might get a little bit loud.
Okay.
That's why I threw these on.
Oh, okay. You still have some time to keep going?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay.
What I was going to say is I think what happens, we talk about this a lot on the show too. We have a picture in our head of something, and then when we go to communicate, we use these words, which you were saying, English, it's a beautiful angelic language, but it also could be kind of inverted because people have their own ideas of what a word means, and then it just gets all kind of lost in translation, if you will. Actually, exactly lost in translation. And so I think Sharon kind of had the same spirit of what you were talking about. But what you said about people who manifest or think they're manifesting, I think a lot of it is from ego.
Mm-hmm.
You're exactly right. Yeah.
Yeah. Like in the human design system, I'm like the most manifester you could ever imagine.
He's manifesto man. He just has a big M on his.
Yeah. I'm an egoic manifester, which like literally means if I'm talking with somebody, my authority comes in, which I do see that happen. But in the human design system, manifestors, are here to tell the world what it is that they want and it happens. And I can see corollaries of that in my life, but I'm also aware that the majority of the thoughts that I have aren't mine. They're given to me. So was it my desire to even begin with? And then also the whole thing I brought up earlier about on surprises, like
surprises have been the best thing in my life. So maybe the whole role of the manifester, the true egoic manifester, is to give up on manifesting.
Interesting.
Because it's like, yeah, so what? Ooh, I can draw something and then it becomes a house. And it was actually the thing I wasn't waiting. I was like, oh, there's a cave and I like the cave better than the house. I never knew. Like, you know, it's like, so
you start building caves.
Well, a lot of the earth excavating houses are like above ground caves. I do have to admit I like that.
Yeah, I need to move into a cave.
Yeah.
Where are you located?
I live in Connecticut.
Oh, okay. Are you near Mark Stevens? Mark Steves, you know him?
It sounds really familiar. Do you know where in Connecticut he is?
No, but he's the guy who has the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast.
Oh, I don't know. No, I have to check him out though.
Yeah, yeah. He's a young man your age, about probably a little bit younger.
That's how old do you think I am, by the way? When were you born? I was going to ask you that earlier.
That's a tricky question.
Yeah, no, it's fine. You won't offend me.
So, how old is that guy? How old is that guy, you think?
He's going into his first Saturn return.
Which is what, 28?
Well, it's between 28 and 29 and a half.
Oh,
well,
okay.
I'm 46, just so you know.
Oh, good. So you're like a fire dragon.
Yeah. Yeah. I was born in 76. That's what I was going to ask you when you were born, because a lot of times I heard you talking about your college experience, and I was in the Marine Corps. Actually, I did 4 years active duty from 94 to 98. So it was right around that time. So a lot of things you talk about really resonate with me in that regard.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. I'm a fire dragon also.
Oh, amazing. Let's do it. Yeah. Let's manifest. No.
Same year,
76. Yeah, I just have my 47th birthday.
Oh, all right. Yeah, I was born July 2nd, which is the day outside of time. There's like 182 days before it in the year and 182 days after. So it's like the exact opposite of New Year's.
Oh, that's great. So have you heard of parametric geometry?
I don't think so.
It's something that fascinates me. Have you seen the movie Tenet?
No. I heard you mention it in one of your podcasts, so I think I want to see it now.
So what's it called when you spell something forward and you spell it backwards? It's the same thing.
Palindrome?
Palindrome.
Yes.
I think.
So a palindrome is like a, it's the way parametric geometry works. Mm. What's forward and backwards is the same.
Like a mirror.
No, a mirror.
Not, but like a mirror at the center of the word, basically.
Right. Right, right. So maybe July 2nd is that in the Gregorian calendar.
Mm-hmm.
Because we are talking about all like manifestation and all these things, and there's something to do with time and the notion of causality with this. And it's something, because there, I do believe at a certain level within this manifestation, you can have what would appear to be retrocausal effects.
Fascinating.
Because by retrocausal, just to keep the theme, it's just that, like, okay, so if you're in that space, you're in the July 2nd of, say, existence. And you're just like, okay, this is the day out of time. That's just a saying that you're here now. Just like I said, everything's happening in front of you. It's also only happening in the now. So you could say the now is in front of you. So that moment, in a way, is like an experience of the eternal. Because the eternal is outside of the temporal. So manifestation, inertia, where everything slows down to become matter, it has a bias towards duration, because it has to be experienced. But as Jesus said, we're in this world, but we're not of it. My wife has this notion that the living realm is actually what we would call heaven. And it's that which is outside of time. Mm. It's the eternal. And I really like that. And I hopefully I'm saying that correctly. Interpreting that from a physics perspective is, and this is what Christopher Nolan gets into in the movie Tenet, is the movie is a palindrome. The first half of it goes to the center, which is July 2nd. And then the second half it goes from the middle to the beginning. And it's an exact mirror of one side to the other. Except by the time you get to the second side of it, you're seeing it from a different perspective.
The Hanged Man makes me think of the Hanged Man card.
Looking at
something from a different perspective is what I mean.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I see.
It also reminds me of what you said about the prodigal son in the beginning of the show. And right. I've always really resonated with that. I grew up Catholic, and then I was in this born-again Christian cult for a few years, which was really amazing. But I was like fourth grade to about sixth grade, and I really kind of loved that story then. But now that I've had this whole march through my cosmology, like being a non-believer for a while, or being like a, I guess you what you'd call agnostic, and then having to come back to a belief system all on my own, I really feel like I understand that parable much better now.
Yeah.
I also think of as above, so below, just to interject really quick.
Yeah, I could see that. I also think there's something with the story arc of our life. Is, you know, they say a lot of times you leave the world as you entered it. You know, you're in that. I've been around a couple of geriatric people when they were dying, and they had that look in their eye of wonder, you know. And like that complete, like, I didn't know it until I held my own baby, but like that, it's the height of vulnerability. Mm-hmm. There is no protect. Mm-hmm. It's just, I'm here. Mm-hmm. And so
it's like a surrender. And
And I could see, like, now that I've entered midlife, it is like I am now looking down the hill. Mm-hmm. Like I am on that side of it, of being like, okay, I went up the hill, took my bumps, took my hits, all these things. Hopefully I've learned enough to be able to weather the momentum of going down, you know, because going up, it's slow. Mm-hmm. And then you hit the apex.
It's all downhill from here.
And that's the thing, is braking. Hopefully I have some regenerative braking on, on my vehicle. But like, there's like, that's the thing, is like, okay, now there's this downward momentum, and that's not a bad thing. Like, you can mm-hmm. use that. You could be like a snowboarder or skier or whatever. It's just that, but now things accelerate. Mm-hmm. And so it's once again, it's that curve that we were talking about earlier.
Yeah. Fascinating stuff.
Yeah. When it comes to time, it's a cool thing. I've been enamored with looking at the mandala effect. I call it the mandala effect, not the Mandela effect. And because there have been things from my youth that I remember completely differently than the way it's being expressed now. And I don't put it outside the realm of possibilities that there are technologies out there that can do things retrocausally. Because I know if they have, I know of technologies that are interdimensional in nature, which would also mean that they're quasi-temporal. And if the goal of, let's just call it the deep state, is to bifurcate everybody and to make everybody an island unto themselves, I think they would want to attack the memory realm.
Yeah. And we've talked about this too, where I feel that it could be a way that the collective consciousness is affected in such a way that so many people believe a thing was one way, that it actually goes back and could change it back in time somehow, just because of the way consciousness works. You know, I don't, because we're not in a real, we're just having this physical experience, but we're not in a true physical realm. There's nothing you could actually point to that you could say is actually physical. It just feels like that because of the way our senses are. So that's why I always take that Mandela or Mandalu or Mandelu effect with a grain of salt, because it, to me, it just seems like it's another point of division where people can get on one side or the other of it and just argue about it all day, you know. But I really feel like it has to do with our consciousness and our connection to the collective consciousness, with which I think people overlook a lot too, especially when people are pointing at normies or they're pointing at other people and they're just demonizing them. They don't realize that on one level, and maybe it's not this physical, but on the spiritual, we are all part of the same consciousness. Could it be? And the way we feel in this physical, we're still going to be affected by it and by things that happen in this realm. And we always think we're outside of the box as like truthers or whatever we are. You know, we think we know better than everybody else. So it's just something I keep in mind. But that Mandela thing, for sure, there's something to it.
I'm completely selfish with everything. So I don't, I'm not doing my research to figure it out for other people, because I know in my heart, 100%, that there's nothing I can do for another person.
Yeah.
And I know 100% I will never, ever experience what another being experiences. So I think love is when there's an aspect of your consciousness that wants to know without any filters what another being is experiencing. Hmm. And as a fallen human, because I am fallen, I know I'm riddled with things I got to get better at. In the purest of the love that I have for somebody, when I look at what that is like, I really want to know what they're experiencing. I really want to know them. And I say this to my wife all the time, is like, I'm here to get to know you. That's what this is. I'm here to get to know you. I want to know you. And this, the thing with the mandala effect is I don't know what other people are experiencing. I just know in my own life, it was mirror, mirror on the wall. I learned to read with that book. Like I remember the illustration of smoke on the mirror saying mirror, mirror. Because I remember M-I-R-R-O-R. I was learning to read. So it's like mirror, mirror, because it said it twice. It's almost like Tenet. It's like the palindrome. It's like M-I-R-R-O-R, M-I-R-R-O-R. And as a little, like, because we had all these Disney books in our house as a little boy, I didn't remember a fucking silver leg on C-3PO.
No, not at all.
I slept on the Empire Strikes Back. I had a bed, like I had a bunk bed, and I remember I got it for Christmas. I got the full bed coverings with the pillows, and my friends and I, we play Star Wars with our Legos on top, and I'd be making, there was never C-3PO in linen on my bed with a fucking silver leg. So for me, I really don't care what other people experience. I mean, I do, but like what I'm saying is I'm trying to figure this out for myself, and in knowing myself and seeing this thing in my environment. It's like, wait a minute. And there have been ones I was wrong on. Like I was wrong with Field of Dreams. You know, in all honesty, when I was a kid, I didn't even like the movie Field of Dreams. So of course I would remember it incorrectly, because I wasn't in resonance with it. I didn't love it. I thought it was boring. But I love Star Wars. Yeah, yeah. And man, And my friends and I, that's all we did. We were like lightsabers and killing each other. And Luke, I am your father. Not, no, I am your father. Like, and the all this stuff is just like, man, there's something to it. There is something to it. I'm trying to figure it out for myself. And I believe, like, I think you're onto something. I think if the collective thought it as a different way, then it would be different. Because I do think our environment is malleable. I do think it's malleable. But I'm still waiting for that, like, you know, mic drop moment where somebody just gives me like the full picture of it. I'm like, yes, I can let that go now. I haven't, there's still a question mark in my mind, so I haven't been able to let it go.
Yeah, I mean, we used to play with the Star Wars figures. I think we'd remember. We had the big ones too. I think we'd remember exactly. C-3PO had a silver leg, you know?
Like, exactly. Exactly, because then I had Voltron at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
So if C-3PO had a silver leg, I would have made one of those tiger robot things a different color, and I would be like, look, Voltron, C-3PO are the best, you know? But it was never that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've talked about the Mandela effect on the show before, and I'm very logical, so I try to find a, like, I'm not saying what you guys are saying could or couldn't be, because I see how that could be as well. But I always go back to my logical mind, which says, okay, well, what if, like, let's say in the movie it was, or whatever, I don't know. But then they printed the sheets or the toys, they didn't, right? You know what I'm saying? Like, what if it was in a certain way, but it wasn't in another? And like, what if they, when they printed the Berenstain Bears, some of them had print, you know, some of them printed it with an A and some of them with an E. And so that's why you have different ones and they're just typos. And then I always think about our memories too. Cause like, I've been asked questions before, like, have you ever been on an air balloon? And I have to go, like, I really don't know. Like, I feel like I have. I feel like I have been on one, but I don't know if that was a real thing or a dream because I don't have pictures. Like, I'd have to go ask my siblings or my parents or something, but I have never done that to find out if they remember anything. But our memories can be, you know, affected too by not only by suggestion of other things, but also by our dreams and what we really truly remember and what we perceive. Because like police will go and ask witnesses to write things down. Like, what did you see? How did it happen? What was he wearing? What would his face look like? Right. And everybody sees something just a little bit differently. Right. So like, I always go back to those things, but what you guys were saying sounds cool too. Like the whole mirror thing that you're talking about too, and mirroring time and stuff like that.
I get it. I totally get it. And like the actual Mandela, like, I don't know. I don't know what was true. Like the Tiananmen Square thing. I don't know what's true, but I will tell you fucking what, the Volkswagen emblem as a car connoisseur, mm-hmm. since I was a little boy, I'll tell you this story. In 10th grade, I was a very good artist. Every competition I ever entered, I won. In 10th grade, we were given a mural project. And my friends, there were two guys at my high school at the time, they were older than me, and they had a VW Passat. And they decked it out. Like back then in the early 90s, the Passat was like total bomb-ass car for high schoolers. And these guys put this huge stereo system in it. Like they dudded this thing out. They waxed it like every day. And so I went to my art teacher and I was like, can I do a mural of this car with all the components for my graduation thing? And she's like, that sounds great. You do that. So for 3 weeks, I went out to the parking lot and I drew every aspect of the car. I drew them like with them, like, you know, standing on the side of it, like acting all thuggish. And
all Florida.
All Florida, exactly, with the big silver chains. And then, like, I put on the bottom left the Volkswagen, because I always loved how the V and the W were combined.
Yeah.
I thought that was so cool.
Clever.
So clever. Mm-hmm. And then my dad always talked about boxer engines and how he had a bug, a VW bug, and how it was the most reliable car ever. So I had like Volkswagen on the brain. And so I'm drawing this thing. And by the way, my sister's like top 10 in the world in graphite art. So I'm not a schleb. Like I come from a line of like very, very good drawers. I'm an architect.
Top 10 in Florida or?
No, in the world.
I know. I'm just, I love my themes.
That's awesome. So, and I drew their car and I was about 2/3 of the way through the project. Like I was really getting it. And these guys, they were so stoked to get it. And those two guys, they got in a car accident and died.
Wow.
Yeah, they got high or drunk or something, and they ran into a parked, it was a dump, not a dump truck. What are those big trash trucks called?
Garbage truck?
Garbage truck. And it had the bottom of the truck was down. And they thought it was driving and they just drove directly into it. And they both died with that, the thing going right through
the
cabin. God. So the family asked me to finish that picture for them to be at their
memorial.
At their memorial. And so I finished it perfectly and it was emblazoned and it was signed by everybody in our art class and everything. The V and the W never had a bisection. There was never a split in that. I put 100 hours into that picture. I studied it from so many different angles. I mean, the family memorial was so, they were so grateful because that was like, that embodied these two guys, mm-hmm. my two friends. They weren't like close friends of mine. They were just friends of mine because they were in the class.
Yeah.
You know, they were older boys and the older boys never hang out with younger boys. You know, that's not what happens. And so at least back then. And so it was like, this was like my way of being like, man, these guys were cool.
Yeah.
And I really put my heart and soul into that. And I'll tell you what, I don't care. Somebody could show me, oh, from, you know, Hitler's Germany. Look, there's a split. No, that's new.
That's insane. New.
I don't care if you go back to patents on the actual logo. I don't care what you show me in my reality. In the amount of energy that I put into what I was doing. I would have known if there was a bisection between the V and the W.
Isn't there that crazy? Wow.
There was not. And this is the thing. I care about this because I have an emotional charge. Like this was like in me because of my friends dying.
Mm-hmm.
Like I was attached to the hero's journey from Joseph Campbell as a little kid through Star Wars. It's the ultimate story of the hero's journey. And so, especially those old ones, they were great. The new ones are gay, but like the old ones were so, so
started.
The old ones were so good and they hold up too. I don't like any of the new, like new animation and shit they put on. Get out of here. No, it was so good because he put all the archetypes in it. It was like literally the symposium. It was perfect. So I think they keep playing with these things that have these huge emotional charges. And it's the what I was trying to bring up earlier is that ultimate way to isolate somebody is to get them not to trust their own memory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And remember, that's the stated goal of the CIA. The stated goal at the inception of the CIA was we are here so that people will believe the lies and mistrust the truth.
Yeah, 100%. And don't care much.
Exactly. So it's just like, it kind of fits the whole, you know, tabor and tenor of things.
Yeah, and it fits the theme of our show too, because we rail against division so much about people just arguing on that level. Like, you can have your own, we break it down even to cosmology. We're like, listen, whatever you believe there's like a raccoon in the sky that shits on you, and because of that, you live by the golden rule. Fucking great. You know what I mean? You're great in my book. That's where we can meet in the middle. And the rest, we could just have a fun over Sharon podcast about it. But we don't have to devolve into this name calling and sides and all this stuff, because I feel like it's what somebody else wants and it's not for your benefit, you know?
I love that, because I mean, that's the sign of adulthood, is that you can listen to somebody that you disagree with, mm-hmm. but they've made what is being offered to the majority is to act like a child and to be so overtly emotionally charged that if I disagree with them, they're a bad man or they're a bad woman or whatever. It's just like, ugh, you're just a kid. You're just acting like a child. You're taking 100%. That off. You're taking that offer.
Yeah, I feel like I'm seeing a lot of that now. Sorry, Sharon, I'll let you go. But I was just going to say, I feel like we're seeing a lot of that now because of this. What happened? We just say the nonsense in 2020. That's kind of subsiding. So people were so used to fighting against that, especially in our circles. And I think a lot of people got adrenaline and stuff out of that. And now that that's subsiding, it's like they're turning on each other. You know, it's really crazy. So
I can see that.
Yeah. But Sharon, you were going to say?
I also was going to say, going back to what he said about like love, I feel like true love is like a non-judgmental view of someone else's experience. And you were talking about, you love to hear other people's experiences.
But I'm going to qualify that. Because I'm more from the Ayn Rand school of love than anything.
Okay.
How dare you?
I know. Ayn Rand saved my life, by the way. She totally took me out of the subjective new world, the new age, new world BS. Mm-hmm. And she was very specific, and she got me actually to the core of the feline, the feminine, the kitty. So she's being interviewed by Dan Rather, I think in like 1958 or 59. And so it's in black and white. You know, I forget whether it was CBS or NBC. It wasn't Dan Rather, excuse me. It was the other, it was one of those like, one of those super famous anchors that had been on the news for like 40 years. And he's asking her, he's going, so, you know, Anne, people are saying your book is like highly, highly divisive. And this whole notion of like the Ubermensch and like the, cause he was talking about Atlas Shrugged. And, you know, you're railing against collectivism and the need for somebody to succeed on their own merit, and the your views on the meritocracy, and your detractors are saying that there should be equality of this and that, and she just looks at him and she smiles. She might have been like in her 50s at the time, and she is just like, so when you come home from work and to your wife, you're married, aren't you? And he's like, oh, yeah, I'm married. Do you ever like not compliment your wife because she's just the same as all the other women in your life? And he was stunned. He was just like, and that snapped me out of this malaise of just absolute fucking equality bullshit that I had been programmed with from the new age. Because she was exactly right. If I was to go to my wife and treat her like every other woman, because we're all equal, she's not my fucking wife. Just because I want to know my wife from now on doesn't mean I want to know every other woman from now on. It's not a halo effect. This is one of the biggest problems humans have, is actually having discrete sections, and your affection is one of them. Just because you have affection and you have a resonance with one being does not mean that that should be universal. And we're, and in fact, when I read the Bible from Jesus's perspective, he definitely did not have universal love. The people that talk about him say that. But he says over and over and over, I came here with a sword. He was kicking the shit out of people in the temple. Do not cast pearls before swine. Oh, but the swine are equal to the people that aren't swine? No. He's making divisions and derivations and saying, nope, think. Have discernment. There are differences. Not everybody is equal. Because if the second you go down that equality of outcome path, that equality, no, it's not true. And plus, you're overemphasizing your ability to discern the actual information you're receiving from your environment in a small snapshot of time. You don't actually really know shit. So in reality, when you actually do feel that incredible impulse to like love one person, you should never feel that that should be a universal thing. You instantly in that moment, you're actually out of your heart. You're in your head. You're thinking that's not natural. That's an unnatural thing. So sorry, I busted in there because.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, that was really good. It made me think of something we talked about. When Brandon and I did the show, a solo show that we did, we talked about love, and there's so many words, so many meanings for the single word love in the English language. You have like in Greek, you have many words for different aspects of different types of love, right? So, you know, when we say love, like Brandon was saying, it could mean something to you. It could mean something to someone else as I'm speaking it, but hopefully context, we can explain what we mean when we're talking about that love, right? And I liked what you talked about just now. That was amazing.
Yeah.
But go ahead.
No, I was just saying for anybody that's kind of caught in the malaise of the whole monism aspect of conditioning, read... It was one of Ayn Rand's students. I forget what his name is. He has a Jewish name. This book called Objectivism. It's awesome. It's a treatise on objectivism. And it takes you out of the fully subjective aspect of, you know, it's actually quite apropos for right now because there's a stellium with Neptune right now that would make people extremely subjective. But yeah. Woo. And I'm not fully, I don't rail against subjectivism because once again, I don't know what anybody else experiences. They can describe to me what they experience, and then I'm having a filtered experience of what they're describing, but I can try and walk in somebody else's shoes, but I will never walk in their shoes. Mm-hmm. So in a great way, the only thing that you ever really know is what you're experiencing.
Exactly.
What's cool about this treatise on objectivism is it actually shows you on so many different levels how the subjective realm bleeds into how what you think is objective is actually the subjective noise. And that's why grounding is so important, is because when you ground and when you're grounded, it lowers the noise, which would be like the subjective interpretation, and just leaves the objective reality.
And that's funny because in music, or I know because I'm a wedding DJ, if you don't have a proper ground, you do get noise that comes through.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Do you love that? What movie was that? Was that an Adam Sandler? No.
Wedding Singer?
The Wedding Singer. No, not The Wedding Singer. It was
Crasher?
Wedding Crasher. Crashers.
Oh, yeah.
The one guy's at the beginning, he's like, what cover is he doing? And then he throws in like, I fucking love you.
Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's an actual song that they did too. Because I'm motherfucking love. Yeah, I can't think. I know what you're talking about though. Yeah.
That made the whole movie. I didn't the whole rest of the movie. I was like, oh, this is downer after this. That one part of that wedding singer was so funny.
I do that with that song, Dancing in the Moonlight. I'm like, I'd love to do a cover and just be like, fucking in the moonlight. Everybody. Yeah. Yeah. It's just
awesome. That'd be great.
Oh, God. That's funny.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Awesome.
So maybe since we are getting close to the third hour.
Oh, wow.
Something like that.
Nice.
Maybe I'll ask you, what a little bit about how to find your, like, how do you do a chart that you think is more valid toward sidereal or Vedic or whatever you call it? Cause I don't know the difference really. Is there a difference or are they similar, the same?
Well, true sidereal is the closest thing to the ancient Ayurvedic way of looking at the sky. So there's a website called Mastering the Zodiac, and authored by Athan Chimanti, and he's done an excellent job of, I guess you would say, systematizing the real sky. And I think he uses the open software from the program called Stellarium.
Okay.
And Stellarium is an aggregate of, I think, over 1 million star charts over the last 100 years. Oh, so it's much, much, much more. And they keep updating it. They keep adding charts for every day. And so Stellarium is really cool because, like, I can't say with 100% efficacy that this is exactly what it was, you know, say 50 years ago or 47 years ago or whatever. But I do know the math. When I say I know the math, let me be more specific. I know the geometry of the way the Western tropical system is totally does not match what's in the sky. So it's just like, because there's, you know, the difference between 13 and 12 in the sky and the difference of that the constellations are different sizes, you do have some overlap. But almost all the degrees at which things are in somebody's chart are off. Wow. And so I've also noticed, like, there are certain things also depending on who you are and when you were born. The moon might have a greater influence on your life than the sun might.
Mm.
There's all these different things that you have to, because it's very specific.
Yes.
Like the solar horoscope and the tropical astrology will give you like the warm, fuzzy version of what I call the persona.
Okay.
And the persona is that which you want people to see of you. You know, it's the image that you're projecting. It's not actually you. When you go one layer deeper and you get to true sidereal, or just call it real sky, like, not, don't even call it astrology. You just call it astronomy. And you call it astronomy with the law of correspondence. Well, astronomy with the law of correspondence gets you then more to the id, more to like the core of who you are. And then if you're lucky enough to have the information about your origin. And one thing that really started me to look at the notion that your conception astrology was important was starting to learn the law. And when you start to look into the law, those that identify with their birthday are considered public and are a security, are securitized debt. But those in the private realm are the beneficiary of their own treasury. They receive their inheritance. And so when you look into court procedures and stuff like that, if you're asked what your birthday is and you give them that which is on your birth certificate, you're a ward of the state. You're in the public realm. And so just listening and hearing a bunch of people that had actually gone through the process of not identifying with their birthday and what standing that had put them in, it kind of cued me into, I've already seen that there's a difference between children that were consciously conceived and children that were happy accidents and or unhappy accidents. And so I'm seeing a difference in that. And so obviously, I mean, this whole realm is built on consciousness, so there has to be something to that. So you guys listen to Chance Garten, right?
Yeah, we've
Sometimes
had him
I've
on the
had some of
show.
his.
Yeah. So he introduced me to his court astrologer, Kaylee, and I told her what I was thinking about a few years ago. And I asked her what her opinion was, because I know she was just starting out with astrology. And she did some research and she found out that the way I was seeing things was exactly the way the Rosicrucians had done astrology for 500 years.
Ooh.
And I was like, oh shit, this is some family karma. Because I'm pretty sure I have some Rosie Cross stuff in my family background. But the yeah, it just makes sense. It's like if you go one layer deeper, it's like when you're a chef, you like, you know, first you learn how to deglaze a pan. You like you just go, you always get a little bit better at your craft. And I mean, I've been paying it. I'm an old man now. Like we're fire dragons, dog.
That's
We have
right.
to have we have to have some level of proficiency by now, I'd hope. And also just really getting to know people. Also, like I was telling you, the body doesn't lie. So I'd be massaging people that were identifying as Leo, and I'd be like, you are as earthy as they get. You're a Virgo. No, I'm a Leo. And I'm like,
That's what you want people to think you
that's
are.
what you want, and that's what you've been told, and that's what you identify with. And one of my first teachers, and it hit me so hard, he's like, the biggest problem with being a human in humanity, the biggest problem is identification. And I saw this so much because I'd be working on somebody who was going through something, and the zodiac man always represents in the body. So, like, I'm Pisces Aquarius, and so I always have had issues with ankles and feet, you know, and that's exactly how the zodiac man presents there. And I've seen this. I mean, that's actually really the genesis of me, like letting go of the tropical system was I worked on so many people, and then I was doubting myself in my notion. And then I was like, I came across True Sidereal, and then I backtracked and I was like, no, I was right. That was Scorpio energy. And I would be like, holy, and it just blew my mind because the body never lies, but the personal the persona, I should say, like the persona likes to lie. In fact, the persona by nature is a lie. It's
Yeah,
marketing. It's marketing.
it's like
It's
the
marketing.
didn't persona come from the word that meant like you were playing a part or an act? You were an actor, basically.
A
I think
mask.
that's the
Yeah,
the mask.
that makes sense to me. I don't know the origin of that word, but that makes complete sense to me. But that's the fun thing about having naked bodies on a table. There is no mask. And so, like, you know, especially like you see this a lot of times with people around their birthday, wherever they are in the zodiac, that really starts to present for them. And like when you like really know the like I was saying, the correspondence to the astronomy, you're like, ah, okay. And then you get all the different flavors of like what, like, especially if like there's a stellium or there's like a really strong conjunction, you get to see what pattern is playing out. It's so neat. And then the body itself has all these reflexes in it also, and that's polarity therapy. So a lot of times the body will shunt energy to a different area. Like I'm dealing with that right now. I have, for the first time in my life, I have sciatica and I feel like such a putz. But the sciatica, you feel it in your leg, but the problem isn't in the leg at all. The problem is in your spine. So just like, oh my goodness, you know, I've been working on everybody forever that has had sciatica and I've never really had compassion for them till now. I'm like, oh my
Ooh, I
goodness.
wonder if that's why.
Well, it was because it was so misdiagnosed. Like so much of my career working through people's glutes and everything was like they would have a gluteus minimus strain and they would say, oh, I have sciatica. And then you know, like what sciatic, the sciatic nerve, and I would hit the sciatic nerve and they would have no response. I'm like, you don't have sciatica. And every once in a while, I'd come across somebody that they would cough a little bit and their whole leg would hurt and be like, oh, that's sciatic. That's the true sciatic. And they didn't even know it. And so I'm like, oh man, you know, but I, the sciatica is happening in me just because I haven't been listening to myself. Like I've been getting the correct signals of what I need to do, and I haven't done it. So of course, near my birthday, what occurs is that old energy, the zodiac man comes through, inhibits the energy in that specific zone. And where do I feel the majority of the pain? Left foot and ankle from the sciatic shot. Very, very interesting. It's actually a lot of fun to watch because at a certain level, at a certain point, you get to be like, oh, that's my fault.
Yeah, exactly.
That's my fault. I knew better. I've been knowing for a very long time I need to take care of X, Y, and Z, and I haven't done it.
I was just saying on the previous episode that Brandon and I did the solo episode that I think it was that episode that when I now when something happens to me, like if my whatever's hurting, whatever, I go back to because I have this little chart from Eileen McCusick's tuning fork stuff. I have this little chart and it tells you where in the body, like what it means. Like if something's like if your left shoulder is bothering you and there's pain, discomfort or whatever, that's usually related to pain, like loss, you know, some maybe someone passed away, there's sadness, there's grief. So I always go and like, okay, what is that? And I ask myself, like, is there something going on that I haven't let go of, or is there what caused this to happen? Because I don't think that it's just a coincidence anymore when something, because I know when my body is fine, there's nothing wrong, right? So when something is wrong, then I'm like, okay, what's going on? What can I, how can I address this? Because it's not, I know it's not a coincidence.
Yeah, I'm in total agreement with you. Check out on your chart what left butt cheek is.
Okay, I'll let you know.
Guys, I gotta dip out. We've
Yeah,
been
yeah.
yeah
on it.
we were
Yeah,
yeah
definitely
awesome.
for
Well, where can
sure.
people find you?
At topherhq.com on Telegram, it's the BioCharisma podcast. We also have a BioCharisma podcast chat on Telegram. On Instagram, it's probably where I've been on the longest. I have it's just BioCharisma on Instagram. And so I'm probably gonna start doing like a Instagram live stream once a week just to answer questions because I field a lot of questions. I just need to kind of streamline that process so it's a little bit more efficient for me. But yeah, those are the places.
Awesome.
Wonderful.
Thank you so much for coming on. Thank you so much for giving us so much time. It's
Yeah,
been
my
really
pleasure.
amazing and mind-blowing. I can't wait to go back and watch some of this. I think you already, I didn't say it when it happened, but when you were talking about the Victor I'm actually writing a book about victim consciousness, and I think you just finished it for me with that old concept. I was like, oh yeah, that's what I was missing. Yeah, so thank you. And for awesome. The watchers and listeners and everyone that's in the chat, because we premiere these every Thursday at 8:33 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, we have a nice little chat going. So shout out to you guys. Thank you guys for coming here. And if you'd like to support us, you can go to morelawsmoreproblems.com, my website that I've had for 10 years now. Click on the oversharing tab, and there's all kinds of ways to support us. But the best way is to just show up during these premieres or leave a comment or like and all that fun stuff. So the only thing I have left to say is, what do we say to the good people, Sharon?
That once you start oversharing,
then you totally stop being a Karen.
That's right.
All right. We'll see you guys next week. Sharon, take care.